Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang, offering our loving salutations at His lotus feet for this yet another opportunity to bask in the glory of His message. Let's begin today's session. Slowly and steadily, we are in chapter 5 of Sandhya Nivarini. As I mentioned before, Bhagwan started writing Sandhya Nivarini along with Prema Vahini, the first Vahini that Bhagwan penned for mankind as he started his mouthpiece from the ashram, Sanatana Sarathi. Those were the blessed years when every month the chosen families received into their homes messages that Bhagwan had written specially for that month. And every month, year after year, Bhagwan wrote these Vahinis till 1984, and that is how we have Prema Vahini, Sandeha Nivarini, Sutra Vahini, Vidya Vahini, Bharatiya Paramartha Vahini, which later on became Satya Sai Vahini, Ramakatha Rasa Vahini, and so on. Sandeha Nivarini is very different because here Bhagwan became the Bhakta as well as the Divine Lord who answers the Bhakta's questions. He's the one who knows what is troubling us, and He's the one who can remove everything that is blocking us from taking us to the Divine. So in this chapter 5, when the Bhakta asks Bhagwan to explain the concept of who am I, Bhagwan says, I am going to tell you that, but before we move on to that, let me give you a beautiful poem. Spend time understanding every word and every letter, every line of this poem. And after that, I will give you the message to understand the principle of who am I. It is a long poem, and in the last few episodes we've been taking segment by segment. In fact, the last two episodes we spent on the same segment because there was so much to contemplate on. Today we move on to the fifth segment of this poem, and Bhagwan has blessed three brothers to be with us, join in this satsang, along with Brother Bhargav and Brother K.M. Ganesh. We also have today Brother Abhimanyu Kaul, again a former student of Bhagwan's university, and someone who has spent a lot of time studying Bhagwan's literature, and in fact is engaged now in disseminating the teachings of Bhagwan through an entrepreneurial venture entitled Values in Action. So it would be very interesting to hear his insights on what Bhagwan has written for all of us. So let's listen to segment 5.5, and then we'll pray to him to guide our thoughts.
By rotting in the mundane world till you die, what benefit do you derive? O madcap, can this safeguard you from the sufferings in the nether world? When the bird of life flees from the body of this doll, it becomes a lifeless wooden doll to be dragged away without delay. The body made up of five elements finally merges back into the elements. Being deceived, you claim it as mine and wallow in sorrow. Relations accompany you only up to the courtyard or graveyard. What can unshackle you and never ever abandon you is the Lord's name, your true friend in distress. Do not take the body to be permanent. It will drown you in midstream. This body doll with 9 holes is so fragile that it can drop off at a sneeze.
So that is the segment. Even though it is just 4 stanzas of this poem, for those who are familiar with Telugu, they would have probably heard this poem, Tai 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 Bomma. It has been staged. Children from the primary school have danced to this poem on many occasions in front of Bhagwan. The students of the Anandpur campus did a puppetry show on this. Swami wanted us to spend more time and understand the nuances of the message that is conveyed here. So brothers, what comes to you as you read these lines of Bhagwan? Brother Abhi, when you call, because you are there, it's not every day that we get the chance to listen from you.
Sairam brother, thank you for having me in this beautiful discussion. In fact, reading any of Bhagwan's poem or writing is such a nostalgic experience. You're reminded of many things. At the outset, I was recalling, somebody asked Swami, who are you? And abruptly Bhagwan replied, who are you?
Oh, okay.
And he said, the moment you know who you are, you will know me.
Wow.
And in my little experience with Bhagwan, I can say that whatever he did from the day one till the last day of his earthly sojourn was only to remind us of our true nature of being divine. And when I read this few lines, they are all full of same message,
yes,
similar knowledge, but put it in such a beautiful verse.
In fact, we don't know the Telugu. People who understand Telugu love it more.
They will, yes. Because unfortunately, translation always dilutes that. Translation does not justify Bhagwan's beauty of writing. But, you know, he would always joke. I am actually reminded of a funny instance also. You know, he had made a play in which he used to write a lot of plays, as all of you know, and Swami used to direct it in those days. And looking at that, our class boys, in fact, when we were in final year or something, they made a small drama for Bhagwan to come and watch. In that play, there was a boy who was dressed up like a girl. And the storyline was basically that one boy falls in love with this girl. And because of that, he becomes disobedient towards everybody. And later on, he realizes the futility of his attraction and he repents for it. This was a kind of a play which happened, and Swami saw that. It was nice, very well conveyed message. And next day we were sitting in the portico, and Swami very seriously came out. Very seriously, his face expression was like as if, you know, he's not slept kind of. So he says, hey, call that hero yesterday, the boy. So the boy who was acting like a hero came forward. And, you know, he was the man who got crazy about that girl kind of. So he came forward, he said, where is that girl? Bhagwan asked him. So the poor fellow said, Swami, he must be sitting somewhere. He's of course a boy. So he said, Swami, he said, you know, whole night I didn't sleep. So we were all shocked looking at Swami as to why he didn't sleep. He said, she was so horrible. How could you fall in love with her? So he made a fun out of it.
Divine humor.
Look, how could you fall in love with somebody who's so horrible? And then he said, it's all skin, mud, raw mud. So, you know, he makes it, he cracks a joke on one end, and immediately he'll bring you down to the message that always understand the reality of our life.
Yes.
But the fun part was that he cracked a joke. He said, that was so horrible. I didn't get sleep the whole night. How could you? No? So it was, when you're reminded of that, same thing. We are born out of this. Bhagavan is to, in fact, these are his statements. He said, you cut your body, you see what comes out. It's filth.
Yes.
It's a garbage bin. Then people who eat meat, he used to say that, they have made their bodies as burial grounds. What is the difference between that and this? So you're a moving burial ground. You carry dead bodies in you. So he would make you realize that literally you cannot be this body.
Yes.
You cannot be this physical, But this body is a temple which carries that supreme gem, that precious soul, the spirit. So because it holds and enshrines that supreme reality, hence this body needs to be preserved and guarded and sanctified. Otherwise, this is nothing. Because the day you leave, as it writes very beautifully, the moment you leave this body, even your closest relative will say, take the body away. It will start stinking.
Stinking, yes.
So imagine the messages to be conveyed on a daily basis. You develop a different outlook towards the life. So on one hand, how to take care of your body. You maintain your good health, good physique. But not because you are in love with this body, but because you are in love with that supreme consciousness which resides in this temple. And that is why the approach is that if you take care of this body, it is a service you are doing to that Almighty.
So beautiful. In fact, that reminds me of an interesting story that I read. So, probably we also would have heard a similar story. So, a person has four wives. And so this man loved his fourth wife a lot. And he would take great care of her. Give her the best to the fourth wife. Then the third wife also is someone this person loved, and he, whenever he went out, he wanted to show off to his friends. That is the time he would take the third wife. And the second wife was someone he would go to whenever he was in trouble, whenever he had some problem to be sorted out, he'll go to the second wife. Didn't really like so much the first wife. But the first wife was actually the one who was very interested in his welfare and who would take great care of him, but he never seemed to be very interested in the first wife. And time went by, and suddenly he fell sick, and he felt that he's not going to live for long. And so that is when he feels that, I have four wives with me. It will be nice if I can take one along with me. I don't know how the journey is going to be. And so he calls the first wife and he says, can you come along with me? And the wife says, no way. No way. I mean, you're going, but there's no way I can really come. And the way she says no, it stuns him actually. Then he calls the second wife, the one who would always, he would take to showcase as his better half. And so but he used to always have this fear that, this lady, tomorrow maybe she will leave me and go off with some other man. That feeling was always there. And he could see it from her eyes that the second wife was almost saying, fine, if you have to go, you go. I'll find someone else. It's fine. And the third wife he goes to, and so the third wife is like, I know I have been there with you. Whenever you had a problem, you came to me. But this is one thing where I will come. I will come with you till the grave, but I can't come beyond that. Beyond that, there is nothing more I can do. And then he's so despondent, and he feels there's nobody. Then suddenly a voice comes. I will be there. I will help you, and I will follow you wherever you go. Don't worry. Then he looks up and it is the first wife. And so he's very shocked. And he feels that, you know, this is the wife that he didn't really care for, never gave it any attention. And this wife is actually skinny and starved because sort of she's never cared for, but she always looked after him. And he feels, if only I had given more attention to this wife, because ultimately she's the one who, when whole world has sort of abandoned me, she's the one who says, I will be there with you. And the story goes that this is how we actually deal with the things in our life. The fourth wife to which the man gives so much attention is the body. Mm. And when it was time to go, the body just did not even think. He said, fine, you go, you go. I mean, body just didn't feel any attachment to that person, actually. The second, which the man always showcased to others, is our wealth, our positions, our status. We always wanted to show off. But they are with us today, they will go away tomorrow. The wealth is there with you tomorrow, it will be with someone else. So it's not going to be there for long. The third is your family and friends. I mean, they'll be there. You feel they'll sort out problems for you. They're there for you. But they can only do so much. And they said, okay, we'll come. We'll come with you till the grave. We'll try and see what we can do. But there's nothing more we can do. And the fourth, Swami says, is the good deeds that you have done. And this is the only thing we don't pay much attention to, and the only thing which we carry with us, as you said, yes.
Yeah, so beautiful actually. Abhinav, Vami brother and Bishu brother, I am reminded of one very beautiful episode, if you know, Yaksha Prashna.
Yes, Mahabharata.
Mahabharata, actually Yama Dharma Raja, actually comes out as Yaksha and then questions Dharma Raja.
Yes.
Actually, there's a hilarious part to it. Mm-hmm. Actually, he signs off as a question. He signs off the final question before he says, okay, now you have won the battle and you can ask for whatever you want. The final question he asks is, what is the news? News, the breaking news that Devi have.
Mm-hmm.
The answer of Dharmaraja is fascinating.
Yes.
He says, the news is that ignorance is the pan.
Mm-hmm.
Sun naturally is the fire, which is burnt underneath it. The day and night are the fuel, which actually burn the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the months and the seasons is the ladle, which actually stirs the whole concoction or whatever is happening. Cook, the one who cooks it is the time. Mm-hmm. And who is getting cooked? Those people who are in ignorance. All of us who are the people in the world who are in ignorance are getting cooked in that.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that the biggest predicament of this life is that we think that we see someone has died. We think, oh my God, we feel very sorry about him.
Mm.
But finally, we never realize that one day this body also will fall down. This
even though we see everyday people dying, but we always think that we are going to live forever.
So, the previous question is, what is the biggest wonder in this world? And then comes, what is the news?
Mm.
So, these are two things which actually Dharmaraja says. So, what actually caught my attention was that not the breaking news which we generally see these days. It's actually, this is the news that you are always in ignorance, you are being cooked by the
current news that you see. It only breaks you, it does not make you.
So this, he says, this is what actually is the reality. We think that we are going to live forever, even after seeing people dying, people leaving us, but still we wallow in that concoction of ignorance. In the pan we get fried, but we don't feel anything after that also. This is the biggest ignorance or biggest, I don't know, why he calls it as a news. News means the most happening thing. Means that's the only thing which is most happening in the world, in the samsara, whenever something happens.
You know, unfortunately I feel the word death is always connoted in a negative manner.
Yes.
And people don't want to talk about it, and it's considered to be inauspicious.
Yes. Mm.
But there has been quite a lot of discussion and studies on it, and in which I heard once that, you know, people recommending as a motivation,
yes,
that one should talk about death.
Mm.
If you live with that consciousness, not the fear of death, but the consciousness, awareness of death all the time, you will have a better lifestyle.
Yes.
It's not a fear of death that I'm going to die. Because death is inevitable. In fact, it is happening every second.
Every second
something is going, something is coming. So death and birth is happening continuously. But the event what we call death is when the consciousness leaves this frail and goes off. But this part is unfortunately considered as negative. If it is made positive and we accept this truth, like you accept sweating, you accept sleeping, you accept breathing, you accept dying. If we accept it and live, whole process of life would change. The process of implementing morality, you know, discipline, all that will naturally happen if only people started living with a conscious awareness of death as the eternal truth of life. And unfortunately, I don't know when and how this whole concept changed when we start treating the word death as a negative word.
Yes.
If only we can convert it into positive and inspiration. Imagine if you say that, hey, you got half an hour to live. What will you do?
Yes.
Will you crash down and waste the half an hour? Like Parikshit, use that 7 days to read Bhagavatam, to listen about God. He had an option, either to cry and, you know, wail for 7 days, but he used it in a positive manner. So the choice is ours again. I don't know how I'll live tomorrow or not. I always joke with my, you know, talks. I always say my life, Bhagavan has put me, is that to make you laugh and happy. So anybody comes in my contact must be happy. So when people laugh in my workshop, I tell them, I have done my job for today, so I can go back and kick the bucket tonight. Because I don't know, buddy. I have done my job. If tomorrow again I wake up, that means God has got some more people for me to go and make them laugh, you know. So if I can only live with that awareness of consciousness of death all the time as a positive source of my life, then how beautiful the life will be. No regrets to carry forward.
Absolutely.
If I have done something, finish it now. Say sorry, get
just
it off.
Add to what brother says, like even if you see our lifestyle in the hostel, we do our Krama Prarthana, we do Karacharana Kritamva, we offer everything to him and just retire for the day.
Before sleeping.
Basically, Swami says, you die to all the thoughts and all the feelings for that day. And when you get up in the morning, come with Suprabhatam. Means, again, wake up the same Lord in you and then start your day with a beautiful manner.
Yes.
Actually, one beautiful incident, actually, we might have discussed it before also, that once Swami was in Trai and then one boy who was in this deep floor terrace, he just went and saw that Swami's shadow was walking in the Trai. So he comes and tells the warden, sir, I think I saw Swami bouncing around, like he was just walking around in his room. It seems warden sir goes and asks Swami next day, Swami, what is this? We heard that you didn't sleep, 10 o'clock you were awake. It seems Swami told, come on, yes, I was waiting for the boys to offer their night prayer to me because I am there here for what? To get all your offering, whatever you do, sincerely offer it to me and be free. So what brother says, death is actually death of all those feelings, whatever we do, sincerely if we just offer it to him, we are free. Next day morning, that's why Swami has put Suprabhatam for us. Swami has told one, I remember once one of our senior brothers was telling that he asked Swami, one of his interviews, he asked Swami, Swami, why should you do Suprabhatam? Swami told very, very, very down to earth and very jovial way. See, when you go in the morning without clearing your bowels, what happens? No, Swami, there will be a lot of uneasiness. We won't be good. In the same way, when you go without doing Suprabhatam, your mind is not clear. Your mind is not fresh for a new day. When you invoke me inside you, you say, actually, Swami, you wake up. You wake up within me. And then do the work for today. So, as brother told, first we die, the next morning we again wake up and again die. So, actually, Swami has given that idea to us every day.
Oh, beautiful.
Get up in the morning.
I had not heard this, but it gives you a new insight into it. Beautiful.
Absolutely.
So you wake up and
you can clear the account.
Yeah.
Every day clear. Just clear the account with the Swami every day.
Every night and
every
wake
night.
Up in the morning and invoke him again.
Invoke.
Lovely.
Yeah. I think that's beautiful. Well, as you were also mentioning, Brother Abhimanyu, about, you know, if we had like half an hour, if someone were to tell us that this is the last half an hour of our life, you know, how would we spend it? And if you do an experiment, I've thought, you know, if you go today and someone asks someone, for example, a youth in a metro or wherever, you ask him, okay, what is the thing that you want to do to enjoy life? You know, so he would give 10 things, you know, maybe watch this movie or maybe do this, you know, maybe, you know, go and play this game or just finish that last lap of that video game or whatever, you know. So this is the way our definition of enjoying life is. But the same thing, but if you tell them, okay, you know, you have just 1 hour left, you know, what would you want to do? But people do different things then.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
If this is the best way to enjoy life, why are you now thinking, oh no, yeah, let me just go and serve this person. No, let me just go and just do this thing for my mom. I didn't listen to my mom all my life. I think once, let me just go and just, you know, fulfill this little wish of hers. Or, you know, I didn't hug my child. You know, let me just go and do this. Why do we do this? Do these things now? If this was not the best thing to do and the best way to enjoy life or something else. So we intrinsically know. We intrinsically know. But because of gunas and because of the attractions and whatever, as Swami says, I was reading one discourse, in the earlier times, Swami said, 75% of the population were moksha pipasas. You know, they were mokshaarthas. They were waiting for moksha. They used to pine for liberation. That percentage over the years has come down, 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 down. It's now probably even 10% of the world also doesn't think about moksha. Yes. But there was a time when, you know, 75-80% of the population was constantly thinking only about liberation. And that is the transformation, I think. If it happens, then people's outlook will change, what they do with their time will change, how they look at things will change, their perspective of death and life, as you said, will change. And once that changes, you know, you do different things, you know how to utilize your time.
Yeah, one more beautiful thought actually, a lot of nice insights we got now. One more thing, because anyway, whatever Swami is telling here is only talking about that whenever you have body consciousness, whenever you are attached to the body, you will get all the sufferings, you will go to another world, you get into distress, your body will be lost and you will be in a lot of sorrow. So I remember once, I think when we were studying, we used to have this Dharmavahini as one of our syllabus in books. So one thing which always used to come out as an essence of that particular text, Dharmavahini, was, and I remember Swami once had spoken to the faculty also who had asked Swami about this. Swami told, there are only two things, really two things, I can sum it up into two things. One is, anything which you do with the identity of body will bind you. Mm-hmm. It will give you suffering. Anything which you do with the identity that I am doing it for the Lord will liberate you. That's the only thing which is the essence of dharma.
Swadharma, paradharma.
Yeah, so.
Swadharma and paradharma, yes.
So it is like, fine. It sounds very nice, very simple. Whatever I do with the identity that the body is doing or I am doing, will bind you. Whatever I do that I am not doing, he is doing, will liberate you. Fair enough. Very simple. To just understand it in words. But how to put it into practice? There comes the whole struggle for us. Like, how actually to do it? So, one thing which I felt was, do a beginning. Might be we start, okay, I'll be thinking, okay, this is, I am doing this, I'm talking or whatever. But if I start with the feeling that, okay, I'm doing fine, but let me try to offer it to Swami, let's see what happens. Might be if I start doing this, probably after some time, if I sincerely start doing this, a time will come when I'll get the realization that, oh my God, it was not me who was actually speaking. Because so many thoughts came to me which I never thought about. So might be it is something else which is coming through and actually speaking through me. So might be everything in life, I feel, is an experiment for us. Because we have umpteen number of instances where we can actually apply this into practice. Because from the morning till the night, we do so many activities, we indulge in so many activities. And everything we indulge is our body and mind. But so Swami gives us so many opportunities to, okay, let you take the step, let me see. So when we start putting the step, probably there will be a time where we'll say, yes, Swami, I'm just a flute. You are only doing everything, not me at all. So might be that is the steps which you have to take.
I think that's a very interesting point, Brother Bhargav, that you raised. Even though we say that, you know, body is just made of five elements, as Bhagwan says, and it will finally merge back into the elements, and don't be deceived that you are the body. But people will ask this question, you know, but, you know, all that is nice as a philosophy, yes, but...
See, when the implementation time comes, no, the Buddhist tripper falls off. The moment, somehow, that attraction comes, for that moment, no, when the attraction comes, something hijacks your buddhi, or common sense, all the knowledge that you have.
Yes.
So that is where, as brother was pointing out, everything is practice, abhyasa. In fact, we come again and again, is because this life is given to practice. Swami used to say talking practice, speaking practice.
Yes.
Even darshan, Swami used to say, some of the boys, in front of me are so, like, you should even practice that. Means you should practice it so much that it becomes your second nature.
Pretend.
So, many people, even the very honest sadhakas, seekers, no, they have told, when the situation comes, somehow the situation takes over the individual. So the answer, there's no quick and short answer for it. But a person who is alert, a person who is, even in the smallest of things, like if he's eating food, there are thousands of actions that we do, sitting, standing. For sitting itself, Swami has told, sit straight. I mean, now the fact that if I have to make sit straight, there has to be a conscious effort. And that conscious effort is an offering to Swami. Okay. So I can always sit like this. The moment I remember, this is what Swami has told me.
Yes.
I sit straight. I am putting Bhagwan in my life. Like that, everything, when I'm talking, if talking becomes unnecessary many times. So whether it is what Swami would like, yes or no. So like that, there are umpteen number of things which we can have in life where we are putting him into practice, where a real situation, a test comes. Swami says, I give the test so that you know where you stand. Then you have passed in that examination. But if there is no attitude of putting into practice, no, then we are, it's a very good discussion. It's a very good knowledge. In fact, knowledge is also sweet. It can be very addictive. Okay, but that is not what, medicine might be sweet, it might have all the composition, but if it is not assimilated, if it is not put into practice, then we are losing a great opportunity. So other thing which Swami very beautifully told, in one of the discourse where Swami was mentioning about the conference of animals, you know that.
Yes.
And the main thing they told is, humans are behaving worse than animals. Okay, then why should they be given that status? So Swami, I mean that, Swami explains that there are five aspects to a human being. Manusha Daivatvam.
Yes.
There's a divinity. Manusha Manushatvam. Okay. The humanness itself. Okay. Being good, speaking truth, human values. Manusha Danavatvam. A person can be demonic also. So rude, so violent. That aspect also is there. And probably it is there at the time when the caveman time, for self-defense it was there. So something has passed on. That is more for self-preservation. But now we are not staying in that realm or era. Then comes Manusha Pashutvam. And Swami says the fundamental difference between human being and animal is, a tiger, when it feels hungry, no, it will go for the food. It will go for the flesh. It will not say ki apna hai, paraya hai. It will not say, it will just go for the food. But man, when he gets the urge, he has within him the ability to exercise control. No animal has. Once the animal, once the tiger has tasted the blood, even if the master would have been his master for so many years, once it starts licking the blood by mistake, the wound. In fact, there was a story where a king had to shoot his pet tiger because it started licking, because it wants it. It doesn't want anything else.
Instinct is
powerful. Then there is a fifth level, and that is the lowest. Swami says, Manusha Hinatvam. Hinatvam is worse than animal, because animal, papam, they don't have the ability to control. Man having the ability to control, if he doesn't exercise that faculty of his, he's worse than animal. And that worse than animal nature is called Hinatvam.
Wow.
That is Hinatvam. You're worse than animal. So, there are five aspects. So, every moment, now unfortunately, in the realm outside, the world has been designed to be attractive. The five senses are there, five elements are there, and the experience of Shabda, Sparsha, Rupa, Rasaganda. In that we want pleasure. So already so many attractions are there. And in light of all that attraction, where do we remember this? So unless we consciously put an effort, and only human beings have the ability of practicing, consciously putting that effort, we can evolve to be a human being and of course divinity. Otherwise, there's a very high chance that you will fall down to the hinatvam or behave like an animal or worse than an animal. So this is probably a deep introspection we should have that, yes, we know all that, but when it comes to practice or day-to-day world with hundreds of distractions, and thanks to mobile phone, there's now whichever world or whichever place you want to visit, you can visit. It's not that. So with all that thing in your hand, if you are allowing the mind to have its free rein, then we're ruined, literally.
I'm actually reminded of this concept which Bhagavan had taught us, CIA.
Yes.
Constant integrated awareness.
Yeah.
Awareness about what? You know, if you ask this question, about what?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to be aware, Bhagavan said, but the question is about what should be aware of. So from a physical awareness to beyond physical, I use this word not metta and all that, but beyond physical, if you're aware of yourself, who you are, that is a catch. And I'm happy, Brother Ganesh, you mentioned it so nicely about it. And I feel, you know, we have this exercise of CIA, and there is a very popular thing, mindfulness. Mm. So all that is actually to bring you down to the conscious level of living in which you do. And I was recalling that we were discussing about it before, that how did Swami train us into that? See, if you, whatever you're saying, you know that we have to be conscious of every day-to-day activity. It's only possible when our mind is free.
Mm.
Because today, if you look at the normal people, they wake up in the morning and they don't know how the day flies. The mother is chasing the child and the work and the dad is running around. So if you look at the whole life cycle, it is so busy. They are busy with nothing. But they are busy.
They are busy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they come back exhausted. So in that free time, you tell them, hey, did you spend 5 minutes for yourself? He said, what? I have no time.
Mm.
So why are you alive if you don't have time for yourself? What are you living for? But yeah, unfortunately, this becomes a too luxury for them to think that, hey, can I squeeze in 5 minutes for myself? And that I found in Bhagavan, if you look at it, if you remember Swami, he had so much to do physically. Forget about his being divine that way. From morning till night, he had million things to do. He was running a big show, a big empire. Still he had time to attend bhajan every day, morning and evening. And in bhajan, you will never see him in a rush. He comes out darshan also gliding. There was no rush on his face. I have at least not seen him in hurry or a worry that, my God, I have to finish darshan, I have to give interview. He had nothing. He was, at least he has no time. And then he would sit for watching the plays and how many million plays every day. Even if you and I watch every day, we'll get tired.
Yeah.
But he would patiently sit through. And I used to observe him for that reason, that, Swami, how are you able to manage it? And I could, my little understanding is that because he was so focused on himself, like he was so aware of himself, if I may put it like that, it's very foolish to say that. But if I have to say it from a human perspective, that for him, nothing mattered. And literally, I have tried that. Once your mind is stable, if you have the habit of pausing, if you practice pause in life, then you will see that there is no hurry in life.
Mm.
You will suddenly find answers, solutions coming to you without rushing. But if your vessel, your body is not stable, if you are agitated, running around, then it's very, very difficult even to get a one good thought in your head.
Yes.
So, Baba used to say very simply that, you know, if you have a pot of water, like bowl of water, and if you want to see a reflection of the moon in it, and if your hand is shaking, your body is shaking, your hand will shake, and the water will shake, you can never see the image right. For the image to be right, the water has to be stable, for that the pot has to be stable, for hand has to be stable, and the body has to be stable. So if you look at it that is the process. And that is where I always recommend people to take a 5-7 minutes break in day and just take your time. Do nothing.
Yes.
Just sit lazy. And I'm telling you, 90% of people are scared to sit free. They think as if they are wasting their life. So just at least waste the 7 minutes on yourself. And you know how I felt Swami has trained us? It was in darshan time.
Darshan time. Yes. Absolutely. You can sit for 2 hours. 3 hours. 4 hours.
To sit there for three hours waiting for his one glimpse.
Yes.
And we were not allowed to look anywhere. We could not look anywhere, of course. Our eyes were jammed at the door.
Yes.
Because if he looked anywhere, he would come out and say, "Hey, monkey, where are you looking?" So we are aware. We were made to be aware of his divinity, that he's watching us all the time. Because he would come out and tell you.
Yes.
And he would not only tell you where you're looking, he'll tell you what you're thinking also. Mm. So imagine you can't even think. In Mandir, you can't even think.
He has a divine advantage.
Because if you think, he'll tell you why you're thinking.
Yeah.
So like that, we used to come to Darshan, I believe, around 3:30, 4 o'clock.
Yes. Much before that.
Much before that sometimes. And yes. Then Bhajan would get over by 6:37.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
All that time, we were just sitting there, either reading a book or just closing our eyes. Yes. We were expert in meditation, at least pretend meditation. We are absolutely expert in that. Yeah. But I realize that today, because of that sitting postures,
yes,
today we are able to pause, think fast, and take, you know, right steps. It's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
But how he trained us was very funny style, actually.
Really amazing. I mean, when you think about it, you know, if you tell a youngster that, you know, you have to go to a temple and sit there for 2 hours, it'll be like, you know, torture for him. But, you know, all of us, actually, when Bhagavan was there, we did it every day, like two and a half hours, 3 hours, we just sat there. And we studied just 1.5 hours every day, 1.5, 2 hours, that's all was there for study hours. And that continues even now.
I mean, if you look at it, you know, people can spend years to practice, you know, light meditation or focus and bring your mind to one stable. Here was God. Of course, it is a big blessing. We cannot really thank him enough for it. When he would come out, he doesn't have to look at you. Even if he's just sitting on his chair, we are just staring at him and we lose everything. The whole 20,000 people sitting in the hall can forget themselves. If only that red form was outside. Imagine at one go, he had that ability to give 20,000 people or more an absolute sense of full concentration.
Yes.
For which, if we had to meditate and get that level, we would not. And more you see in all these activities, what happens to us is, we start losing our body consciousness.
Yes.
And the more and more you lose body consciousness, you feel happy. And that is why I feel that after darshan, we are always elevated. We are always floating, blissed out. Because at that 3 hours, we literally were not bothered. In those days, sands used to burn us.
Yes.
There was sun, hot, but nothing mattered. The moment he came out, that glorious form, standing in front of us, ever fresh. I don't know what happens to us. We used to get really fresh. And every pain, itching.
That's one of the nature of divinity. Divinity. So that Nitya Nutana.
It's always fresh.
Every time you look with the same anticipation towards.
Yes.
That's the beauty of Swami's darshan.
I think all that he did it for us in a playful manner, without even our effort, you know. Mm. I don't think any one of us really consciously did anything like that.
True.
It was just,
and we have to take advantage of one thing, because one thing which our mind does not know is, one is the real experience, I'm looking at you. But even when I close my eyes and visualize, if I'm visualizing you, it can be as real as the experience, direct experience. So one beautiful thing that has happened with all of us is, for many people, if you talk about different yugas, or if you go back even a few hundred years, I'll tell about myself, before I came into Swami's fold, I used to go to temple, I used to look at Krishna statue, I used to look at Bhuvaneshwari Maa statue. One part of me is, yes, I believe in God because I was brought up in a family which were believing in God. So, it has faith, it is praying to God. And sometimes when I'm praying, I'm pouring out my problems. 8th class boy, you know, I'm struggling with my EVS subjects. One side, at some corner of the mind will be, are you really listening or I'm just, okay. That comes, okay. But yeah, one thing about, a great thing about our Hindu culture is like temples, no, they have prasadam at the end of the thing. So even a small kid of 4 years looks forward to going to temple. The samskara, the culture gets cultivated, okay. But with Bhagwan, the greatest gift that mankind can get, and plusly, if I say, when I came into Swami's fold and started reading about Swami and coming to know that he's a Purnavatar, I have not a iota of doubt that divinity exists, and because Bhagwan came, avatar came. So having seen that avatar, and even people who say we have come post 2011 April, God's message is there. Luckily, we have God's photograph, God's videos. Where else? Even if you visualize internally,
yes,
okay, that is a very, very, very powerful practice that anybody can do. Because it is pure divinity. Yes. Okay. Even after darshan, what we used to do actually, when Swami has left, we'll close our eyes. We'll just capture that moment when Swami looked at us or smiled at us, and we'll just immerse in that. That's what we do. I mean, that's what we are doing. And it used to give us so much of strength and energy.
Absolutely.
Same thing we should do, and we should not put it down like, okay, now, many people say, okay, we have come after this, you have enjoyed that period and all that. No. Bhagwan is, how much?
Nitya Nutana means it is there even now.
Even now. Nitya, it is Nitya.
It is there even
so
now.
So it is how much you, or the distance between you and me is the distance between you and yourself.
Absolutely.
That's what Swami is.
It is a question of your intensity.
And once we start doing it, no, the thing is, we sit and analyze or overanalyze.
Yes.
Anybody who starts doing it, no, will experience it immediately.
Immediately. Oh, true. That's so true. In fact, when Bhagwan came out for darshan, going by Brother Abhimanyu's description, at that time, darshan was meditation.
Yes.
Right? Because, you know, he completely captured you. You saw him. And as long as he was there, you were out of your body, in a sense, you know. So darshan was meditation. And now, meditation is darshan.
Darshan.
Yes.
So now,
very well said.
When you sit,
very beautifully said.
And when you meditate, you see him. It's the same.
Absolutely.
Darshan is meditation, and meditation is darshan. In fact, this is what Bhagwan actually said also, when someone wanted to know how to relive these moments or how to do meditation. Swami said, just imagine, replay these darshan sessions
in your mind.
Yes. That's it.
Press the replay button.
Just press the replay button. If you're physically there for a darshan, you know, just relive that moment. In fact, Bhagwan told Anil Kumar sir, you know, who should teach in the chemistry department, Swami actually said that if you think about a moment that you had with me with intensity, and if the intensity is really great, Swami said, I will recreate that moment for you.
Wow.
I will recreate it for you. Just that you have to be that intense. In reliving that experience.
Yes.
And I think that is something that any of us can do.
And this intensity that you're talking about, Vidhana, bhajan session especially.
Exactly, that's what is going on. Yes.
For me personally, I'll tell you.
Bhajan also is darshan, and darshan is bhajan.
There are some bhajans, no? It immediately.
Yes, it happens.
It just, and the torrential flow of tears starts.
Absolutely.
It is out of joy. In fact, the boy sitting will say, everything is fine. No, I told him, so I should sit in the end. In the end, so nobody sees. And you're like, you open your heart, you're looking at Swami. You just immerse yourself in
absolutely.
The bhajan. And one thing, beautiful thing which Swami had told in about why Namasmarana is so powerful. For example, Swami says the word Rama itself has got three bijaksharas.
Yes.
Rama. It has Surya Bija, Chandra Bija, and Agni Bija. The Agni Bija burns your sin.
Yes.
The Surya Bija enlightens your buddhi. Yes. And Chandra Bija calms your mind.
Yes.
So that is the power like Rama. And every...
Come again, please.
It has three bijaksharas. Rama. There are Surya Bija is there, Agni Bija is there, and Chandra Bija is there.
Huh.
The Agni Bija burns your mala, the sins.
Okay.
The Surya Bija enlightens your buddhi.
Oh, okay.
And the Chandra Bija, it calms your mind. Because mental agitation, some people say, without any reason they're agitated. Without any they're anxious. So the answer is, the sadhana for Kali Yugam is Namasmaran.
Namasmaran.
Now, for some people, japa, is they feel there's no taste. So, Swami said, okay, we have put music.
Music
we put
now.
Bhajan.
Yes.
There's no one who will say that I don't like bhajan. And bhajans are so beautiful yes. with Namasmaranam.
Absolutely.
So many things happen. And it's and over that, if you close your eyes and visualize Bhagwan, the man, I mean,
absolutely.
The best thing.
I think that is what was going on in my mind, that, you know, even in this day, you know, why do people come to bhajan sessions and they feel so good after that?
Yeah.
Because it is for that half an hour, 45 minutes, you know, where somehow everything that was bothering you throughout the day has just stepped aside. You just feel that for that half an hour, your mind was out of everything that it was running after during the last 20 hours.
Correct.
And I think, so that is something that Bhagwan set it so beautifully for all of us. He started his mission with a bhajan.
Yeah.
And he ensured that, you know, earlier in the early days, darshan was separate and bhajan was separate. In the last few years of Bhagwan's earthly sojourn, darshan and bhajan became same.
Same.
Actually, Swami never discontinued bhajans.
That's never. What I'm saying. It started, mission started with the bhajans. Yeah. And this is one activity.
Even for examination time also. He had reduced timing.
But bhajan never stopped.
Canceled.
Yes.
Never cancelled.
Bhajan was one activity which has remained a part of the Satya Sai avatar right from the time he declared his mission, actually.
Right from Manasa Vajra.
Right, so yeah, it started with Manasa Vajra and till the end, bhajans were always there.
Always.
Vedam actually came little later, if you see, but bhajans is something that was always there. And today if you see, the appeal of bhajans, the magic that bhajans does, it is something like darshan actually.
Darshan.
What darshan can do, even a bhajan can do. And
actually,
that's
the Sai bhajans are becoming a new stream of music itself.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a very beautiful stream. It's a beautiful like offering, my God.
And
it's never discontinued.
When you talk about the feeling also, brother, it's like iron which is rusted and looking at the magnet. I'm not getting attracted to you, okay? No, it's not magnet's mistake.
Yes.
So God, the magnet has given you the bhajans. When you sing bhajans, the rust are removed and automatically the iron in you gets attracted to the...
Yes.
So the thing is, when you start the process, no, of course it takes time. It has its own period. The beauty of bhajan is even as you're doing bhajan, you're enjoying it. It is not
yes.
like after some 1 million Gayatri mantra, you'll get that, you know, you're waiting for it. As I'm singing bhajan, I'm enjoying
you'll enjoy it.
So that's the beauty of bhajan. Okay.
Instant
and constant.
yes, absolutely.
One more thing. Abhimanyu brother was telling about this. Swami was telling, "Hey, monkey, what are you doing?" When we don't think about, we don't see him. So, I don't know whether you are aware, in Vrindavan, Trai, we used to have some Sivadals who were called monkey boys.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very, very special chance.
Yes.
So, it's a very...
To remove the monkeys, right?
Yeah. No, yes. The thing was, there'll be special... like test or evaluation will be done where Sivadals will come, youngsters who are very energetic, and then Swami will choose. These people will be my monkey boys.
Monkey boys.
We used to love and enjoy because see, it was not us, the Sivadals who will be coming, they will be doing. So what they will do is, the Trai is in the middle and all these monkey boys with their scarves will stand as a guard around the Trai.
Sivadal scarf
and they'll stand around and then actually, they'll be there to shoo away monkeys.
Yeah.
Not coming inside and disturbing Swami. So, apparently disturbing Swami in his residence. So, but you know what? Swami always says, whatever I do, there is a reason. There is something deeper into it. So, when brother was talking about, hey, monkey, your monkey mind.
Mm.
So, actually what, if you actually understand, there is such a deeper meaning into it. I'm standing there and trying to shoo away the monkeys which come. The agitations or whatever variations of our mind, so that they don't come and touch the Lord which is inside me.
In the lotus.
The lotus Rai which
lotus.
Is inside.
Yes.
The Lord who is inside. Those stray thoughts or the evil
yes.
thoughts or whatever, the agitations, whatever is there. You guard there, you stand there, keep a guard so that they don't come and spoil my peace. So, Swami is to make all of you stand.
And they're on
exactly.
Seva. So if you're in Seva.
Always, no? always alert.
Yes.
And you know what?
Seva,
they'll be
yes.
so alert that, my God, how? Swami can come out and say, hey, what are you doing? You're not alert. So they'll be whenever that 6 hours or 8 hours of time when you're standing there, you'll be 100% 100% alert, full alertness, complete presence, 100% in the moment.
Yes.
Only to God, what? Monkeys coming and not attack.
In fact, you
how
know,
can the monkeys come and attack Swami Strayi? I don't know. But there is a very deep inner meaning into it that
yes.
Please guard your heart from getting agitated by your thoughts or your...
Yeah, I mean, if you look at every activity, it's just Swami has created these opportunities for yes. us to be around Him. In fact, other day when I was in Trayi, I was talking to a long-standing devotee who was a personal witness to this incident, which Brother Ganesh also once mentioned, wherein, you know, one day, as Swami is walking in Trayi, and suddenly, you know, you hear these noise of the monkeys, and then Swami asks a brother to go inside and bring peanuts. And so Swami takes these peanuts, and there are some 6 or 8 peanuts that Swami is there in Swami's hand, and then Swami opens his palm and signals to these monkeys, and all these monkeys come down the tree, and one by one, each monkey, they come in a row, and they pick up one nut. Each monkey picks up only one. And dutifully, in disciplined manner, he goes, and after that, the next monkey comes, and next monkey comes. And you know, all of them just take what they are supposed to take and in the most disciplined manner, and they go. And this auntie, Mrs. Vimalanathan, she was a personal witness to this.
Oh.
So, to me, this is a very beautiful analogy of how Swami trains our monkey mind. This is what he does, you know. Our mind keeps going here and there.
Mm.
And but once it is focused on Swami, once Swami snaps his finger, then, you know, our monkey mind also learns to walk in a single file. Go to the Lord with full focus, take what you are supposed to take, and do everything that He wants you to do.
If only we can educate this monkey mind to get a higher taste. It is not that you are, if you hold the monkey tight, and only suppressing, that is not the solution. It has to be given a higher taste.
Yes.
And of course, we are talking about bhajans. Even knowledge, I was saying, can be very, very, even if you read Swami's discourse, Swami's messages, and the best thing that I love about Swami's messages is the analogy that He gives.
Yes.
The examples He gives. Because of course, He's the creator, and the way He gives straight goes into your heart.
Yes.
And when it dawns, an understanding dawns at that moment, even as it dawns, you know, the bliss, the happiness that you feel, wow, Swami.
Yes.
I mean, you fall in love with Him more and more. I mean, of course, we rise in love with Him, but
true.
This is Sai Baba. I mean, so beautiful it is.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the one other important thing that Bhagavan talks about in these 4 stanzas, of course, today probably we will not have much time to dwell on that, but it's a very important thing where Bhagavan says, what can unshackle you and never ever abandon you is the Lord's name,
your true friend
in distress. And I think earlier also, brother, when you were saying that, you know, how can we get rid of body consciousness? And you said, you know, every moment, whatever we do, let's offer it. Let's think we are doing it for Him. We are doing it for Him. And I think one way to do this is to build that friendship with God. I think most of the time, if we have to be happy, if we have to lead a spiritual life in a very enjoyable, entertaining manner, I feel this is the way. Just make God your friend.
Yes.
Because Swami says that the final is
Atmanivedan.
But before that is Sneham. If you can make God your friend, then there will never be a dull moment in your life. There will never be a lonely moment in your life. There will never be a moment in your life when there is no fun in your life. There will never be a moment where there is any sorrow in your life. Because you know that this guy is there. He's there with me. So whatever is happening because He's the most powerful person on earth. So whatever is happening is perfect. And He's all the time enabling fantastic things for me. I think that confidence, if we get, then there'll never be a moment where, be it death, be it anything, depressing us. And talking about analogy, Swami says how our friendship with God should be. And it's a very beautiful, I just read it this morning, where Swami says, satsanga is to be with the sat all the time, and sat is the divine. Oh. And Swami says that the friendship should be like milk and water. Like milk and water are constantly in friendship. Both are happy when they are together. And Swami says, what happens when you boil the milk? When you boil the milk, the water evaporates. And when the water evaporates, this milk no more is able to contain itself. The milk also wants to come out and fall into the fire. So Swami says, this is how our friendship should be. Like when water disappears, so like when God disappears out of my life, like I also want to just come out and fall into the fire. What is the point of me living? I just have to perish. Why should I live? Swami says, that should be the intensity of the friendship between you and God. And then Swami says, so if the milk is overflowing, what is the best way? Sprinkle some water. Then it will pacify for some time. So similarly, if we sprinkle some godness into you, then you are okay.
Wow.
Sprinkle something divine into you, then you are fine.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, you just want to just go into the fire and become ashes, because there is no point of you being there. Swami says, that is how the friendship should be. I feel it is such a
beautiful.
It's
very, very beautiful, Pranav. Oh.
Amazing. I mean, if, and I think one analogy is enough for us to get liberation. Take us to his path. It's just that we talk and we don't really put this into our life every day. But I think that's the whole purpose of having this satsang, so that we go on listening, at least something will go in.
Something should penetrate into
something
us.
Should penetrate.
Some water falls on us.
True, exactly. True.
I'm reminded of one thing, you know, and Swami say, you know, it's not enough that you are good.
Yes.
If you hear many people say that, you know, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm happy, and I do my goodness, so I don't need anything else in life. And Bhagwan, one day very beautifully said, he said, that is being very selfish. I didn't come to make you good so that you can be good. That any human being must be. So my touch has to make it different. And what is the difference? He said, it is not enough for a spiritual person to be good. He has to be good for others. It is not enough that you are doing everything what is required. You have to become a conduit and a reason for others to become good. Then only you are truly spiritual. And when we talk about chanting, I recall, you know, there is a, Swami used to say, there is always a step. Like initially we say, Swami, whatever I do is with your grace. So that is kindergarten. Then we say, Swami, you do. I am your instrument. He said, now you are trying to dodge God. So your ego is so big that you are trying to say, God, that Swami, you are doing. But you do yourself. You think yourself. You act yourself. But you are trying to pass the buck.
But
to
while
God.
Saying, you just say that.
You are saying.
Yeah.
But Swami says, okay, still I accept it because at least you are trying. But do not rest. Because as long as you think, you have still not given me. You are thinking. So ultimately, I was just thinking about it, like, Swami, now what else? You know, what else can we do? And then he very beautifully said that the moment you forget that you are doing, then you have started doing.
Beautiful, correct.
So, so the game of it is that all this time when we say, I am chanting, you know, say Swami's name to do this, Swami's coming, Swami's doing. All that is just a kind of camouflage we are doing with ourselves. But real time will come when His name is on our lips and we have forgotten that.
That we are chanting.
We are chanting. It's like a breath.
When you are meditating only when you know that you are not meditating.
Not meditating. Yeah. Yes.
If you are meditating 2 hours every day, you are not meditating.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you are saying confidently.
Yes, I confidently got it. Two hours,
yeah. Okay, 10 minutes left.
Can you imagine that small thing which you throw at us?
Beautiful.
That
beautiful.
You wonder, like, Swami, all these years, what did I do? You know? And then he says, still you are remembering, you have not. So that means my, like my breath, he says, no, soham, soham.
So which means the breath, the way we are breathing, similarly our name should keep on going.
Wow.
Yes.
And the moment it becomes a habit,
habit,
then probably you have become.
Yes.
Till then you are only practicing.
Yes.
Wow. And then in this context only, brother, I'm reminded once, in Swami, one of the discourses only, after several years of war, Arjuna told Krishna, Krishna, I want to hear the Bhagavad Gita once again. Can you just, because it was so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna says, I cannot give that Bhagavad Gita now. Because I was in a state of yoga rudaha. Swami used the word yoga ruda.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a moment of inspiration where it just flows.
Mm-hmm.
It came. So this practice brings us to a point where it just flows. You become one with what you're practicing. You lose your identity.
Yes.
And in everything that we do, or whatever you are dedicating to God, with we should reach the state of that yoga rudamu, where
yes.
That yogamu is that union. When the
yes.
union is achieved,
yes.
spontaneity comes.
Spontaneity.
There is nothing like intelligence.
Actually,
after
you know,
that.
If you recall this, Swami has written a poem,
mm-hmm.
I have the Telugu version, in which he has described how these vahinis have originated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Do you know
mm-hmm.
that?
Okay.
He has written a very beautiful Telugu poem
mm-hmm.
describing the ecstatic state of his
mm-hmm.
in which each vahinis have propped out.
Oh, beautiful. Oh.
Mm-hmm. So the origin of vahini was in exactly that
Yoga Ruda
movement. When he said that in the peak of my bliss,
I allowed it. It just came out.
They came out in the form of
spontaneously.
Vahinis.
Spontaneously.
Wow. Actually, vahini is a flow.
Yeah. It's a stream.
So, and he has written a Telugu poem.
Wow.
I can share that. I have that. Actually, I looked at it and translated. I got it translated from somebody.
Mm.
I loved it. It
wow.
is. I'm sure Telugu people will enjoy
definitely,
it more.
Yes.
Mm. In fact, all the masterpieces, no, sir, has come in that moment of inspiration.
Yes.
Everybody
yeah.
says that they go into that zone.
True.
And it just flows. It takes over.
It is no more intelligence. It
yes.
is just intuition then.
Mm. And see, in English
divine.
Also we say, no, I got a thought.
Yeah.
The thought came to me.
Mm. Yes.
So it means it was not within you.
No.
Yes.
You are just an antenna. You
yes.
are just a receptor. Only when your receptor is clean and ready, you receive.
Yes.
So you have to be that chitta shuddhi, that the state of purity has to be so much that the moment you think, it should manifest. And that's what I believe Bhagwan's physical state was.
Mm.
That the moment
that
he thought,
how, I think that is how it was for all the saints, and that is how they just
actually,
became
so
pure
many beautiful things just waiting to be tapped. Just
absolutely.
waiting.
Absolutely.
When I'll get that right vibration to resonate. They're just waiting.
Waiting.
And that's how important purity is. The
yes.
more purer we are,
yes.
we'll be able to vibrate in that our zone,
yes.
and those things will come.
Yes.
But I think, Brother Pishtu, I'll give you another topic. We should discuss purity one day.
Purity,
sure. Definitely. By Swami's grace, yes. Well, everything, as you read Swami's vahinis, all these will keep coming again and again. And there are any number of opportunities to actually to dwell on these. Because I think the essence of everything that Bhagavan has written ultimately is purity.
Purity
is the essence of
yes.
All sadhana. That is always there. It's purity and then it is surrender. I think these are the values that will keep coming again and again. So thank you so much, Brother Abhimanyu. I know none of us want to conclude the session, but time is running out. And
thank
we
you
have
all
to
very much for having me in this group. It is beautiful.
We have to offer whatever we have done. At
a long way
speed.
To go. We have not done anything today.
Yeah, I think probably we'll have to spend a little more time on this stanza. So dear listeners, feel free to share your thoughts, your comments and your insights. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. You can also send us your comments on our WhatsApp number 9393258258. This is just some thoughts. I know each one of you will have your own very beautiful experiences. Our experiments with love, our experiments with truth, and our experiments with walking on this path. Do share your moments of learning and inspiration, and let's together walk on this path with joy, with happiness, and with conviction. Thank you so much. Sairam.